Many of those 12 insiders will be called to testify over the next couple of months in the trial, including Nigel Wright. So we've assembled some experts to discuss the court case. In Toronto, former RCMP investigator Gary Clement. And here in the studio, criminal lawyer Solomon Friedman and Keith Beardsley, a former deputy chief of staff to Stephen Harper. So, Mr. Beardsley, you're in the Prime Minister's office. What's the strategy, particularly because we know many of these advisors were part of Mr. Harper's inner circle, and Mike Duffy has promised to explode some bombshells?
Well, the strategy right now is keep your head down and try and stay out of the picture if you can. They should have by now done their own internal work, come up with their own view as to what may happen, what may come out, things that aren't known in the public. They should have a pretty good idea at this point and have their talk points prepared. I mean, they should have a whole communication strategy wrapped around this.
Mr. Clement, the RCMP have laid 31 charges of fraud, breach of trust, and bribery against Duffy. That's a lot of charges. Is this a case where you throw a lot of charges in the hope some will stick?
No, absolutely not. I mean, I can say probably maybe 15 years ago, 20 years ago, that might have been the strategy. But today, it's got to be based on what the evidence is available. And I mean, all as we know at this time, it hasn't been challenged in court. But based on the information to obtain all of the warrants, it's quite clear that they're doing a very thorough and concise investigation with the intent of for every allegation, they're gathering the appropriate documentation to support it. So I would suggest what you're seeing is that they are building cases, and what they've found is that it was far greater than they initially anticipated.
So, Mr. Friedman, Duffy has hired a top-notch criminal lawyer, Don Bain. It looks like his defense is that the Senate rules were so vague that Duffy could get away with almost anything.
Well, one of the great parts about our adversarial system is that you don't need to disclose your defense in advance. And just because Mr. Duffy's made statements to the media, his lawyers made statements, I wouldn't say that necessarily covers his entire defense. This defense will likely be premised on challenging the documents and their sources, but also in challenging the human beings behind those documents. We have information about who's been subpoenaed for this trial. Those witnesses will be cross-examined thoroughly, either in an attempt to discredit them or an attempt to paint their evidence in a different light. So it really remains to be seen precisely what the defense will be in this case.
Mr. Clement, Duffy claimed a housing allowance, having signed a document saying his primary residence was in PEI, even though he had a home here in Ottawa where he lives most of the time. Is there any chance he can wiggle out of that?
From what we know, the rules, the Senate rules, appear that they are very concise and would support that the allegation that the RCMP has now made, that he cannot claim that as his principal resident. I agree that I think the challenge is going to be that the rules were not well defined. And so I think that one will be vehemently argued when it goes to court. I think the real problem, in my view, from reading the ITO for Mr. Duffy is a lot of the expense claims and the double dipping. Those things, it doesn't matter what defense you're going to throw up. If the documents support it, it's going to be a hard argument to get around.
Mr. Friedman, a big part of this case is also going to be the $90,000 payment that Nigel Wright gave to pay off Duffy's expenses. He's not charged in this, so that's going to make an interesting twist in this case.
You know, there's a difference between the optics of that and the legal side. Strictly speaking, the police have no obligation to charge two parties to a crime. In fact, we often see cases where one party isn't charged so that they'll provide evidence against the other party. But of course, that person's evidence will be naturally suspect. They've received an automatic benefit, that is a walk or a pass on these charges. But in terms of optics, it creates a serious problem for the Crown. If this is a bribery charge, well, there are two parties to the bribery. There's a person who gave the bribe and the person who received the bribe. But I think that would likely be a very logical point of attack in terms of Mr. Wright's credibility and reliability in this case.
Well, you know Nigel Wright very well. He's, by all accounts, a pretty ethical guy, so right. People say that about him. What do you think he's going to say on the stand? And do you think there's a chance he could say, yeah, the PM knew about some of this stuff?
I'd be surprised if he'd say the PM would knew, because I don't think they would have told him, to be quite honest. I think it's more, that falls into that realm of plausible deniability. But he will say what happened. I mean, Nigel's a straight up individual, and he's not going to bluff. He will simply say, this is it, lay it out.
Well, we know there are at least 12 other people that were involved in this. Now, some of that may not be criminal wrongdoing. It may have just been this cover-up. A cover-up, Mr. Friedland, is not necessarily evidence of criminal wrongdoing.
Well, often the Crown will use what we call post-offense conduct to point to evidence of a guilty mind. In other words, putting before the court the very simple question, if you had done nothing wrong, why did you act like you had done something wrong? So, you know, we may have, you know, as opposed to just the strict criminal allegations, the Crown is given quite a bit of latitude to lead evidence about the context and the general narrative of the charges. And I think that's what we're going to see in terms of the cover-up allegation in this case.
Mr. Clement, another part of the case involves $65,000 Duffy billed the Senate to pay a friend, Jerry Donahue, for allegedly doing nothing. Now, some of this money apparently was then distributed to Duffy's friends, supposedly for speeches or political advice. That's got to be a problem.
Well, it definitely, I mean, on the surface, it's a problem. The ITO would seem to paint that. The evidence has to be, though, clear and concise that the money was given for basically doing nothing and that there was distribution. So in order for the RCMP to prove that, they're going to have witnesses that are going to come in and give direct evidence as to their involvement and how that money was passed.
So you've talked to Duffy in recent days. What's his spirits like?
I've spoken to him recently. I actually was more email exchanges a while back, but I think he's probably looking forward to this. This is his chance to vindicate or at least get even, if nothing else. I mean, revenge is sometimes sweet. So I'm sure Duffy's looking forward to it.
So if he's convicted, Mr. Friedman, we're looking at a jail sentence here?
Yeah, in you know, looking at the case law and other cases like this, the courts take an extremely dim view of people who abuse their public position, specifically the public purse, for their own benefit. You know, that's way down the road in terms of if there is a conviction. First of all, it also, you know, will depend on which counts he is convicted on. Is he convicted on everything, on the less serious ones, on the more technical ones? But, you know, if I was defense